Hi, and welcome to Mountain Talk here on WMMT, your community radio station. And thanks to Wiley for a fantastic show there and his special guests for coming on. And I'm your host tonight, Sylvia Ryerson, with Mimi Pickering. And we have some very special guests here in the studio tonight. And we're going to be talking about small-scale agriculture and energy efficiency and renewable energy projects that are happening here in the mountains. And also an event that is coming up this weekend where you can learn more about all of those things. And so to start off with, here in the studio, we have Fern Nafziger with us, and Fern is currently a voluntary service worker through the Mennonite Central Committee's home repair organization, Sharing with Appalachian People, SWAP, and she is the location coordinator for Knott County, Kentucky. In this position, she evaluates applications from homeowners, collaborates closely with the community, organizes construction projects for volunteers, and assists the groups that come to Southeast Kentucky in order to make homes in this region warm, safe, and dry. And Fern also serves on the board for Homes, Inc., and works closely with the Hyman Settlement School, the Appalachian Artisan Center, and other groups in the area. So welcome to the show, Fern. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we also have Cody Montgomery with us tonight, who is a native of Magoffin County and currently lives in Rowan County. And Cody is a potter, an organic farmer, a naturalist, a recent graduate of Morehead State. And he has spent much of his time walking the hills of eastern Kentucky and studying the diverse medicinal plants that can be found here. And Cody has also spent a lot of time speaking publicly in defense of the land that not only supports plant communities, but his own.
Howdy.
Thanks for having us, Cody. Thanks for being with us. And first, I wanted to begin with, would you just give us a little overview of this upcoming event that you're both going to be a part of this weekend, this Saturday?
Sure. This weekend, we are having Growing Appalachia. And it is in Prestonsburg at the Jenny Wiley Convention Center. And it's this Saturday, March 9th. And it's really a day of workshops that focuses on small-scale farming, energy efficiency, and then renewables as well. And we really hope through this event to provide promising and sustainable ideas that people can take home with them to save or earn money and even start their own small businesses. So it's open to anyone who's looking to learn more about these topics and just come join us.
And it's been going on for a few years now, is that right?
Yes, it has. This is the fourth annual Growing Appalachia Conference.
So have this is Mimi here. Cody, have you been before?
Yeah, I've been, I think, three times. I actually helped present a year before last. I was working with a group called Sustainable Morehead. They do a community garden there, and so I was went down and did a workshop on starting a community garden. And then this year I'm doing one on collecting and marketing wild and medicinal plants.
I understand the workshop is happening a little earlier this spring so that you could get ideas. You have plenty of time to plant a garden.
Yeah, you have plenty of time to do that. I was a little bit disappointed because none of the things I'm going to be talking about are going to be out of the ground on the night. So I was wanting to bring some things in to show people. But I know we're a golden seal Apache, so I'm going to go dig a couple roots up and bring them in.
Well, that's very, very exciting. And how do you connect the gardening and the wild plants with energy efficiency and the home weatherizations? How does this all fit in mm-hmm. one picture?
Well, I think it's just a good way for people to get an overall view of things that they can be doing for themselves, especially with some of the energy efficiency. I'm hosting along with Chris Woolery, who might be on a call later tonight. We're doing one of that's like a do-it-yourself home energy efficiency, things you can do to improve your own home. And I think just putting that along with the different farming and renewable ideas it's just a good way for people to learn how to help themselves in multiple varieties.
Yeah, and all of these things are connected as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, if energy efficiency, I mean, it's much more efficient for me to make my own medicine at home than to, you know, have it produced somewhere and trucked into me. You know, food as well, you know, it's just, it's like the, like a holistic approach. You know, everything is connected.
Well, that's great.
And Fern, your workshop with Chris Woolery, who we will have later on this show as a guest, as well as some other presenters, it's do-it-yourself energy efficiency, is that right?
Yes, it is.
And I hear it's backed by popular demand.
I guess so. No, we did do this this seminar last year as well, and it seemed to be very well attended, and people just seemed to want to learn more even, so.
And what are some of the tricks that you'll be going over with folks?
Well, I don't want to give anything away, but we'll mainly be talking about just different ways of, well, it's mostly about air sealing your homes just so that you don't let the cold air in and the hot air out in the winters and vice versa. But so air sealing and sealing your ducts and insulating and different things you can do at different levels of your home.
I guess we're all in this region trying to figure out ways that we can make a living and earn income and that kind of thing. But I guess cutting our expenses is also part of that equation. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have to pay that big a power bill, that would help a lot.
Exactly. It's staggering the amount that people pay on their electric bills every month, especially in the winter. And so anything that they can do themselves is that far further ahead.
Yeah, my mother lived in a trailer, and sometimes she'd have electric bills like $240, you know, because they're just, mm-hmm. they just like sieves, just, you know.
Yeah, and they keep going up and up and up and up.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, we were spared this winter because it was a little bit warmer, but that's definitely been the case in years past.
So. And then, of course, there's also air conditioning in the summer. So mm-hmm. what you do to close up holes in the winter also helps you in the summer, I imagine.
Most definitely. It does. It all works together.
So what are some of the other workshops that are going to be there? And it starts on Saturday at...
Yes, it starts Saturday, and the opening session is at 9:30 in the morning. Uh-huh. We have, like, a registration period before that. And there are three different sessions throughout the day, and at, like, during each session, you have three choices. So there's nine overall throughout the day to check. And then... We're also having a lunch with a, it has locally sourced lunch there provided for people. And there's also going to be a panel discussion that is about people in the area who have built their own small businesses and how that's working out for them. And the workshops range from like a beginning track, and then there's an advanced track, and then there's the energy efficiency, renewable energy track. So,
yeah, we're having one workshop on small-scale dairy production, mm-hmm. Focusing on goats. Mm. I'm looking forward to that one because, I mean, you know, this area, you know, it's not, you know, people want a cow. You know, it's got the, you know, the image of having your, you know, milk cow. But, you know, cows take a lot of land and, you know, where you can have more goats on the same amount of acreage. So it's more suited for this area. So I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah. Some of the other beginning workshops are like season extension and how to make your gardens last longer. And one by Beverly May that is about canning. It's a canning workshop.
She knows how to do it.
Yes. And then also a beginning organic gardening workshop for the beginning track.
Great. I think the woman who's going to do the season extending workshop, I think, is from Pike County.
I and believe so.
She was on our What's Cooking show a couple, like maybe last month or something, and brought in a bunch of vegetables that they had grown in their backyard under hoops. And, you know, they were freshly picked. And that was January. So that was pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you can grow a lot of the brassica species, like, you know, cabbage and kales and things like that, under like a hoop house or like in a cold frame or something. Like, you can have fresh greens. Actually, last year I went out and picked some greens under the snow. I didn't even have to cover them up. We can have food all year.
I guess we, you know, people, like you said, Cody, don't think of this area as one that really supports agriculture or supports animals like cows and all. Mm-hmm. So has it been kind of an uphill climb for people to do this, or how is it taken off?
I'm not sure what people have done with the information that they've gotten from the previous years. But I do see, you know, I see a lot of people implementing things with, I know it just in my lifetime I've seen a lot more people with gardens. Gardens have increased more. And
I know years ago, you in the summertime, there was hardly a house, particularly outside in the county, that didn't have a big garden. But that has changed.
Yeah, I think it's coming back a little bit more because, you know, grocery bills are going up. You know, gas is not going to go down. It's only going to increase, and food's going to go up, you know, with that. And so people are going to be growing more food. And a lot of people just don't realize how easy it is to grow your own food and how little land you need. I mean, if you have a quarter of an acre, you're you know, you can feed your family.
Wow.
One attendee who came 2 years ago hasn't actually increased her garden the past 2 years just by coming to this conference. And before the conference, she had never grown anything in her life. And so I think that's just one of the things that has come out of it. She actually said, "These are the best tomatoes I've ever eaten." So.
Yeah, I actually grew some organic green beans 1 year, and, you know, my mom, she wanted to use, you know, just 10-10-10, you know, everybody uses, so I had to give her a taste test, and and the organic one, they were a little bit sweeter.
Huh. Well, that's great.
And I do think that the agriculture, especially in Floyd County, has kind of taken off, because they started Todd Howard started the farmers market there in Prestonsburg, and I think they've been kind of pushing local producers to look into it some more as an option.
Yeah. I was supposed to participate in that, but the deer they took care of that for me.
You maybe this year you need to bring deer meat.
Definitely. There are a lot of deer on Cripple Creek.
I understand. I saw a notice that there was a group working to organize a Letcher County food market as well. And I know that Perry County has a farmer's market two. So maybe they're growing.
Hopefully.
They're a great way to get fresh vegetables. And it encourages people to grow more and make some income, too. Well, that's great. So you, Fernan, your work... your day-to-day work, you help to rehab houses around the region?
Yes. Yeah. We got volunteer groups that come in. We actually just had a group last week already, and we have one this coming week through SWAP over in Knott County. But we work on projects, just making them safe, warm, and dry for people as much as we can. And it's been a really great experience for me, and I'm sure for the people who come to work, and it's a great way to build relationships with the homeowners and people in the area.
So. And are you able to do any of the energy efficient weatherizing or those kinds of things?
We try our best when we get into those sorts of things, but there are other programs, which Chris and I will go over, the local programs that are more focused on weatherization and those sorts of aspects.
Well, good. Well, we have a couple of guests that we're going to call, and we may call folks that are raising some animals for too long. So, Cody, where do you go to find the wild edible plants?
Well, I've been living in Round County for a little while now, and I really like it up there because there's a lot of national forest that you can go explore. I don't really do a lot of harvesting because there's just not a lot to harvest. You know, there's been, over the last couple hundred years, you know, the forests have been clear cut, mm-hmm. sometimes multiple times. You know, a lot of the stuff has already been dug. Like, that was one of the economies that set up when the English came over here to colonize with the Cherokee was ginseng. You know, that was a big market. So since then, there's just been a lot of plants being removed. So I try not to dig too much just for my personal use. You can find, you know, you can find something about anywhere, really. I mean, we're not in short supply of plant species here. It's just a matter of where to look. You know, like if you're wanting to find ginseng, you got to go to the shade where, you know, like a plant like false Solomon seal, you can find more on the drier, sunnier slopes.
And I understand some of the herbs that are more common than ginseng can also bring some money for
them. Absolutely. One plant that we have that is more common is black cohosh. I find it, you know, fairly regularly. I actually found a really big patch in the Daniel Boone in Round County, and it's used for menopausal medicines. It's really popular. Another one that fetches, you know, a better price is golden seal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. I found some big patches. I found probably a half acre patch once, but you know, it's a little bit more available.
Right. Right. And I guess, like, as you were saying, like all things, we need to not take it all.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen one of the sources that I've used in my studies is the Peterson Field Guide. Basically, I would just study the field guide, then I would go in the woods, and then I would see the picture, the plant that I saw pictured. But they recommend taking, like, maybe 10% of a population. So if there's only 100 plants, you know, you should take one plant, I hope. I'm not good with
math. Well, we have Paul Weidegger on the phone right here. Paul and his wife Allison operate Au Naturel, if I'm saying that right, a farm that's just south of Mammoth Cave National Park in the beautiful south central Kentucky. And their farm has been managed chemical-free since 1989. It was one of the first farms certified organic by the Kentucky Department of Agriculture in 1990. And Paul and Allison both have over 35 years experience growing without using chemicals. So we want to welcome Paul on to the show. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. So we're talking with Fern and Cody and just talking about the Growing Appalachia conference. It's going to be, I won't call it a conference. It's going to be a hands-on day this coming Saturday. And are you going to be there?
Yeah, we're going to do a session live.
We're not getting a very good signal from you right now. Do you want to say that again? Let's see if it's a little better.
I'm saying that, we're going to be presenting at the conference or at the workshop. We're going to talk about season extension techniques that can be used both by home gardeners or by growers who might want to sell, let's say, at a farmer's market.
Great. And give us a little hint of what those are.
Well, for like somebody like a home gardener, I mean, it can be something just like using something simple like a cold frame, like some old storm windows set up on a couple of hay bales, or you might use something like hoops covered with a spun poly fabric. Or for, let's say, a larger grower, we'll actually get into growing what we call high tunnels. And a high tunnel is nothing more than it's a greenhouse, but instead of having electricity and vents and heat, we just use the gain from the sun to warm them up. And by doing that, we can have really early, let's say, like tomatoes and peppers in the spring. But we actually grow in them all winter long. So, like right now, we're growing lettuce and spinach, carrots, radishes, all kinds of oriental greens. There's just so much you can do in them all year round. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's amazing. And what do you do with all of the produce that you grow?
We actually market all direct to consumers. We do it using an email distribution list. We sell at the farmers market during the summer months, and when we're selling there, we talk to people and see if they're interested in what we have to sell during the winter. And if they do, we take their email address. And then during the winter months, we just send them out an email once a week, tell them what we have available, and they can place an order with us. And we go out usually on Friday and harvest right to their order and pack it up, wash it and pack it, and deliver it to their door down here in Bowling Green and in Glasgow on Saturday mornings.
Wow. So so how big a geographic area, then, are you willing to travel to?
Yeah, I like to stay really close to home. I mean, so like for us, Bowling Green's about 35 miles away. So if we go on out, we make our trip, you know, maybe we hit 25, 35 customers, and the trip takes us maybe a little, 105, 110 miles, and we do a nice little loop. And in my way of thinking, that's also really a lot more sustainable and a lot greener than having all those people drive to our farm. I mean, if everyone drove to our farm, let's say we have 35 people drive to our farm, and let's say a round trip for them may be anywhere from 50 to 65 or 70 miles, right?
Uh-huh.
So you take that times 35 people, and let's say they're all doing 50 miles on a round trip, right? So you're talking like 1,700 miles that they're driving collectively, whereas we do it, we just make the trip in a little over 100 miles.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's local food at its best, the way I think of it.
I know that's something that folks are really thinking about more, like even if you know, buy organic food in the grocery store if it came from Chile or
China.
Someplace. Yeah, China.
Yeah.
That it's maybe lost some of its value, both in the travel time and, of course, the expense and carbon used to get it here. Kind of go ahead.
I'm sorry. I mean, it's really true. I mean, I'm a real advocate of organic, and I think you know, my wife and I have been involved in organic agriculture since the early 1970s. But at the same time, I also recognize that today, organic agriculture is so large agri-industry that, to me, I really like it when we can take it back to the local level.
That's great. And was it, did you start off farming organically, or was it something that you changed?
Now, honestly, for me, it was something that I came to back when I was in college, way back in the early 1970s. I was attending Kent State University in Ohio and had an opportunity to listen to an organic farmer talk. And what he said made so much sense, and it just vibrated with the truth. And I literally changed all my home growing methods and experimented with organics, and it just worked. And I thought, wow, I mean, I was growing fabulous produce and everything was working with much fewer inputs. And I thought, wow, why would anybody want to do anything but this? And to this day, that's what we do.
Huh. Well, that's great. And we had a discussion here a little while ago. What's the organic method to get rid of the deer that eat our gardens up?
Yeah, right. When Tony comes up with that, they should make a lot of money figuring that one out, right? I mean, a lot of people put up extensive deer fencing. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's a real tough one. It really is.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, chemicals aren't going to stop deer and rabbits and groundhogs anyway. So
they really don't. No, they don't.
So will you be talking at the workshop about organic gardening at all, or is it mostly going to be the harvest extension?
Yeah, mostly we're going to talk about season extension, but when we talk about how we're doing it, it's because we use all organic methodology. That's the way we'll talk about it, okay? So when we talk about how we fertilize our plants, it'll be how we do it organically.
And do you have some sources of fertilizer there on your farm?
We actually, our primary fertilizer for our farm here, we do about 2.5 acres outside. We have about 10,000 square feet under cover. And we use a heat-composted chicken manure product that we get from a layer facility out of Indiana.
Hmm.
It's sold by a company called United Granulation. And a friend of ours who's also, basically grows without chemicals, we go together by a tractor-trailer load every year. And bring it on down here for us to use.
Fern, you look like you were on the verge of saying something.
I just think that's really interesting, especially, I mean, just the whole sense of just sustainability from the driving and then sharing and just that general community that you guys probably have there in Bowling Green is pretty amazing.
I think so, and I mean, I think it's a new revolution. I really do. It's this whole interest in local foods is really beginning to build in our local areas. And I think, you know, it's multifaceted. It's I think some people are coming to it really. There's a general distrust of our agricultural distribution food system. Right, you know, you get all these terrible recalls. You know, spinach is recalled because of a disease. You have E. coli outbreaks in meat, and people, I think, to some extent, just don't trust, you know, commercial large-scale agriculture anymore. And on the other hand, I think we also see, you know, a terrible disease issue both with people and especially with young children, mostly around obesity and heart disease. And I think we're saying, wow, there has to be an alternative here, you know. And I think for some people, they're saying, well, you know, either I can maybe spend a little bit more attention, maybe a little bit more money eating good food right now, or I can go ahead and pay a doctor down the road. And I think they have to decide, you know, which is it that they want to do. You know, for us, we're pretty excited to see this, you know, this really new interest in good local food going up.
Yeah, and it seems like Kentucky's really doing some wonderful things and has made kind of an amazing transition from tobacco farming for so many people to all different kinds of edible foods and animals. I think it's there's some real leadership going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were just this past weekend, we were at the Oak Conference in Berea. That's the Organic Association of Kentucky. Had a fabulous three-day conference there. And now we're having, you know, this workshop this weekend, and later on in the month they're having, a Green Living Fair down in Somerset, which is all about sustainable and organic agriculture. And that's pretty exciting. I mean, really think, you know, Kentucky, you know, three conferences like that, back to back to back. I mean, wow, that's rich. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe, right?
Right. Now, you raised it a little bit. I mean, one of the issues here in our region is just the cost of vegetables. And, you know, a lot of people have really been forced to buy what seems to be cheaper food. And I wondered, you know, how you present that as a alternative.
I mean, I think that's a real tough one. You know, as a grower, I like to get a good price for my product, because if I don't get a good price, then I can't be here on the farm. I have to go out and find a job elsewhere, right? And I think on the other hand, I understand that food prices may be high, but I also look then at the health costs down the road. I mean, if you spend a little bit more money right now and buy good, healthy, local, organically raised product, in the end run, when you're not spending all the money at the doctor's office, maybe your money ahead. But and I also think, too, for a lot of people, I mean, these type of methods can be used in a backyard garden. And I think we're seeing more and more people going back to having their own garden.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Do we need to take a break for a... Okay. If folks would like to call in, we do have the number 888-396-1208. That's toll free to Mountain Talk. So we welcome your questions or your comments as well. Do you guys have anything else you'd like to ask Paul?
Paul, I wonder how much you do visit the doctor.
I've been to the doctor like twice in the last since 1995.
That's awesome.
The one time I got my finger caught in a ball hitch and they sewed it back on for me.
Oh.
And the other time I had it was turning into pneumonia and it just wouldn't go away.
Yeah,
so I actually did see a doctor, and the doctor didn't cure it. I mean, it just eventually went away by itself also. So no, I don't go to a doctor very often.
That's impressive.
Well, I think what you were saying about the increased interest in eating more healthy and getting some exercise and moving around, all these things are really good and really important for all of us, but especially a younger generation coming up. And I know I get frustrated at the grocery store when I buy, like, mustard greens or something, and the young checkout people say to me, "Now, what's that?" I'm like, "Well, surely your mama grew that, didn't she? Where have we gone to?"
It's really funny. We see the same thing here. When people come up, you know, we have these beautiful green beans in the summer, and they say, "Oh, I would love to get some of these, but I have no idea how to cook them." And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, you don't even know how to cook green beans. I mean, you do know how to boil water, right? You know, how simple can it be? But it's amazing. We see the same thing like with the chicken we sell. We sell whole chicken, and people say, well, I have no idea how to cut up a chicken. And I think, wow, the skill sets that we have lost. I mean, I'm sorry, people. I mean, there's more to chicken than going to Kentucky Fried, right?
Maybe we need to add that as a workshop next year.
How to cut up a chicken, yes.
Yeah, that's, and of course when you, you know, we were talking about cost and all, but if you buy a whole chicken, it's far less expensive than when you buy just breasts or if you buy from the takeout place or all those kinds of things. So it does take a little bit of time and a sharp knife, I guess. But it does pay off in the end, it seems like, in many different ways.
I think so. I mean, especially because there's, you know, you can get so many different meals out of a chicken, right? You know, you can have the meal itself, right? And then, you know, you can pick some meat off the bones and you turn it into, let's say, like your own chicken pot pie. And you can make soup stock out of the backbone. I mean, there is so much you can do with it and so many meals you can prepare from chicken.
And so how do you all raise your chickens?
We raise them in open bottom pens that we pull across our pastures. So they actually, you know, fertilize and lime our pastures for us. At the same time, we do feed, you know, grain to them. And we keep them, we have them in enclosed range shelters. And the reason we do that is because we have so many foxes and coyotes around here. I mean, if we try to let them run loose. Well, we actually did years ago. We had like free range chickens, and we went like from 120 some chickens to 20 chickens in a very short period of time. So, you know, we learned really quickly, you know, that just isn't going to work for us. So, but they, you know, this way they get to be out on grass, they get to have, you know, sunshine.
Right.
And I like the way we do it.
And do you sell eggs as well?
Yeah, we do also have eggs. Yeah. Uh-huh. We do both. Layers and broilers.
Wow, that's great. And how would you describe the work that you and your wife do? Is this pretty easy to do? Pretty short hours?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get up like at 9 o'clock and then go, you know, we work for maybe 10 minutes and then we go and, you know, sit and have coffee. And no, we put in pretty long hours and long days. But, boy, it's really rewarding, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of a better life. My wife likes to say the best reason to farm is that you can't not farm. And I think that's so true. I really do.
Well, that's great. And a lot of people would love the opportunity to be outdoors more, I'm sure.
I think so. I mean, you can be out, you know, every day of the year if you want to. I really love our high tunnels. I mean, it's just, you know, you take a January day. You know, maybe it's sunny, but it's, you know, 15 to 20 degrees out. And inside the high tunnel in the middle of the day, it's anywhere from 50 to 80 degrees.
Wow.
You know, so you're working there. Like today was relatively cool. I mean, maybe it was in the 40s here today, but it was overcast most of the day. But working in the high tunnels, I mean, I was working in my T-shirt and perspiring pretty freely. I mean, it was warm in there. So and the earth smells so good. I mean, it smells alive. And I think that's just the whole part of it.
Yeah, well, great. Well, I think we have a call coming in here, maybe. We'll see. So will you be doing, tell us just a little bit more about your workshop, what people can learn there.
I think, I mean, basically we're going to deal with you know, explain what we mean by season extension, you know, how you can, you know, use methods to start, you know, getting earlier crops and later crops by using some simple methods. You know, even if something as simple as, you know, making sure you have a windbreak or when you plow the ground that allows you to get a crop in earlier. And then we're going to get some more, you know, go over a lot of different methods of using row covers to extend the season, and then spend a lot of time going on what we call our high tunnels. I mean, for us, you know, in America, high tunnels is still pretty new technology. Alice and I started growing in them in 1995, but they're just beginning to catch on here in our state. Uh-huh. But the thing you have to look at is they were actually sort of invented by a professor at the University of Kentucky, Dr. Emmert, back in the late 40s, early 1950s.
Huh.
And most of the world jumped on this low-tech technology. And for us, we were so spoiled by such subsidized, inexpensive fossil fuels that we didn't see a need for it. And you can go to places like in the Mediterranean, over to China, and you literally find thousands of acres of high tunnels. You know, and here we just see here a few here and there. But it's fabulous. It is amazing just using the solar gain, what you can do during the wintertime with growing crops. It's just, they have to keep in mind, I mean, you know, here we are in Kentucky, you know, we often, you know, you have really gray days. So it's we usually don't have enough light. If a vegetable or a fruit has to flower, you know, like a tomato has a flower to make a tomato, right, or a pepper, something like that. Usually we can't do that during the winter, not because we can't get it warm enough, but because we don't have enough light.
Uh-huh.
But there's so many other things that we can grow. I think the first year we tried winter growing back in 95, we put 26 different kinds of vegetables in. Lettuce alone, we had like 17 different types of lettuce. And what we found is that just about everything, as long as it doesn't have to flower the fruit, I mean, we can do it. It's amazing. We grow some of the best tasting carrots. I mean, it's just carrots and radishes, turnips, all kinds of salad items. I mean, I think if you can think of a salad item, we can probably grow it during the winter.
Well, that just sounds great, Paul. Well, that'll be great for folks that can get over to Growing Appalachia this Saturday. And if you can't, you'll just have to keep listening to this show, and we'll play it over again and learn that you can do this on a small scale or a larger scale. So we'll let you go, Paul, and we wish you a really great workshop this weekend.
That sounds great. We look forward to being there.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Paul Weidegger, and he and his wife Allison operate Au Naturel Farm just south of Mammoth Cave National Park. And as you heard, they provide all kinds of produce and chickens and eggs, all organic, and have been for a long time. So now we have Will Bowling on the phone. His family operates Old Home Place Farm in Clay County, Kentucky. Old Home Place Farm is a sustainably managed, diversified livestock operation that features grass-fed beef or cattle, Katahdin hair sheep, pasteurized pigs, meat goats, and pasteurized poultry. The Bowlings have direct marketed meat from the farm since 2006 and recently began a local meats CSA, or community-supported agriculture venture. So do we have Will on the phone here?
Yes. How are you all doing this evening?
Good. Nice to have you. And so you are going to be at Growing Appalachia this Saturday?
That's correct. I'll be doing one of the advanced tracks talking about our CSA operation. It'll actually be a joint presentation with Tiffany Thompson, who operates a vegetable CSA in central Kentucky. So we'll be able to cover the vegetables and the meat side, both.
Great. Well, explain for us a little bit what a CSA is, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, so CSAs, the concept sort of developed in order to provide a little bit of working capital and protection to farmers. The idea came from Europe back in the early 70s. But the whole premise behind it is that the customers will pay the farmer a little bit up front in order to provide the farmer with working capital throughout the growing season. For us, we're not selling vegetables, we're selling meat. For us, it's more of a cash flow thing, more so than getting us through the growing season, because we have animals growing all the time year round. But for us, it's really, really convenient, makes it really good for us to be able to have cash flow coming in each month, as opposed to maybe only once a year when you haul animals off to the sale barn, or as we were doing in the past when we would sell a whole beef or a whole pig to someone.
Uh-huh. And in your operation, how often do people get some meat?
It's monthly deliveries. So right now it's one time a month we'll go to a central drop-off location, probably pretty similar to what Paul was just talking about, where we'll go out. Right now we have four drop-off locations. The farthest one, I think, is about 40 miles from the farm. But we go and everyone kind of congregates at the drop-off location closest to their house, and we'll load up our coolers with a big bunch of meat and go and match up with everyone and make it happen.
I bet it's kind of a nice community event in addition to exchange.
It is. So that's, to me, that's one of the really cool things about it. So it's nice from the income perspective and the cash flow, as I've already mentioned. But it's also really good to know that the folks who we're selling our meat to really appreciate the product. And I mean, you really can't say too much about the kind of the emotional support that we get from our customers. They really do stand behind us in what we're doing. And to me, that's where the real payoff is at, and knowing that we're dealing with folks who really do appreciate what we're trying to provide for them.
And I imagine they find that the meat tastes pretty good, too.
Well, I think that most folks who are dealing with us would agree that it's a pretty good product. We do, that's always been our goal, to put out the best product possible. So we certainly try to put that first and foremost.
So is the way you're operating now, is that a change from the way you first got started?
It is. My family and I have been farming for, I guess, 8 or 9 years now. We direct marketed meat for about 5 or 6 years, selling whole animals to folks. But a lot of people just weren't able to purchase a whole animal at a time. They either didn't have the freezer space, or they just didn't want to kind of devote that many financial resources to purchasing the whole animal. So now with the CSA, which we've had it going, this is our first season of the CSA. It's been going great, and we've been able to. Some of our kind of our old customers did switch over, but the really exciting thing to us is we branched out to a whole new set of folks who weren't able to purchase from us in the past, but now are able to, because it's a little bit smaller quantities of meat, and they're getting a good mix of meat once a month, as opposed to having to take 300 or 400 pounds out at once.
Yeah, that sounds like a great deal. Really, well, open up your market potentially.
Well, it is, and to me, that's one of the most exciting things about it. Just from being, my family operates the farm in Clay County. I'm born and raised here in southeast Kentucky, here in central Appalachia. And just from the amount of support that we've seen and the amount of interest that we've seen, a lot of other farmers could be doing something very similar to this. And as I said, that's what I hope in the workshop at Growing Appalachia. That's really what I hope to convey to folks, is there are options. There are options to reach out and make it with agriculture with smaller acreages. I mean, we don't have a huge farm. We've got a pretty small farm, and this is just one way that we found to be able to make it and to be able to make an income.
Mm-hmm. That's great. About what is the size of your farm, and how much livestock do you have there?
We have about 60 acres in pasture. Most of that's pretty marginal. We do have a few acres of river bottom pasture, probably about 20 acres in river bottom, but our animal numbers will differ depending on the season and what's having babies at the time. For instance, we're starting our lambing season in right now, so but it all depends on animal numbers, depends on the season. But we do have, as you mentioned earlier, sheep and goats and pigs and cattle.
Uh-huh. And I was curious about the hair sheep.
Yeah.
Are those for meat?
They are for meat. We got into the sheep business about 5 years ago. It was something we were really curious about, and they've done great. As far as an animal that does well in our terrain and our topography, you can't beat the sheep, in my opinion. And hair sheep, so they're called hair sheep. They grow wool this time of year. They do have wool on their backs, but they shed, which is what sheep in the wild do. So a wild sheep, they don't carry a wool coat year-round. They'll actually lose all their thick winter coat, and then that way they're able to stay cool through the summer. That's exactly what we wanted. I wasn't interested in the wool aspect and the fiber aspect of having sheep, and to me that would actually be a detriment. I didn't want to spend time trying to go out and catch sheep and give them a haircut. So it's actually been pretty good. Starting probably in about 3 weeks, the sheep will start shedding their wool, and within about a month, all of them will be slick and have a good slick summer hair coat.
I've often been surprised that more people don't have sheep and goats, because it seems like other places with mountainous terrain do, but you don't see them too much around.
Yeah, and that's really surprising to me as well. I mean, especially if you look through the historical records, that's one of the things I really enjoy doing, is going back and looking at some of the history of our region. And if you look at the historical records, say some of the ag records, the ag census records and that sort of thing, sheep were the predominant livestock in eastern Kentucky until just a few generations ago, until it started changing around World War II. But until that time, sheep vastly outnumbered cattle. Sheep and pigs were the two number one livestock species in southeast Kentucky.
Well, and nowadays you don't see much sheep, which I guess we'd call mutton, or goats in our grocery stores. So how do the people that your customers take to these meats?
We have had to do a little bit of education with a lamb, and that's another thing about it. So a lot of folks have a little bit of a negative preconception about what mutton is going to taste like. First of all, we're not selling mutton, we sell lamb. Mutton is actually from an older animal, so it's going to be a little bit stronger anyway. But the hair sheep are a meat breed, so they were bred all. Most hair sheep breeds were bred for their meat as opposed for their wool, obviously. So they actually oftentimes have a milder flavor than some of the wool breeds. But that has become my favorite meat now. I would rather have lamb as any meat that we produce. And I do love all of them, but lamb is probably my favorite. And most of the time, we'll introduce people to it. A lot of times we'll give folks a pack and tell them how we would fix it. And we've not had anybody yet complain about the taste. Everybody really, really falls in love with it after they try it a time or two.
Well, that's great. You got to have an open mind and try all kinds of things. And have you talked to your other farmers in your area much about what you're doing? Is there interest around Clay County and surrounding areas?
I have talked with some other folks. No one in our immediate area has really expressed interest. I have talked with some other farmers in other parts of Kentucky who think it has a lot of opportunity and think that might be something they will be interested in. One of the things holding us back in our immediate area, I think, as far as more folks moving into the kind of the CSA concept or the direct marketing concept, is a lot of our farmers or older folks who have been doing it for quite some time, and it can be difficult to sort of change your operation up after you've been doing it that way for maybe your whole life, or after having seen your father do it that way for his whole life. So we don't have a whole lot of new farmers or a whole lot of younger farmers in our immediate area. And most of the folks I've talked to who have been really interested in starting it on their place, most of them are either new farmers or relatively new farmers, just kind of beginning.
Uh-huh. Well, that's really good news that there are maybe younger folks that want to get into this.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity out there. As I said earlier, there's a whole world of opportunity for mm-hmm. folks, even in southeast Kentucky a little bit. As we said, it's not the first place that you think of when you think of agriculture, but we do have enough land base. You have to think outside the box a little bit and just keep pointing in the right direction, but you can make it work. I'm confident of that.
Well, that's great to know, Will, and I think your workshop's going to be a great addition to the Growing Appalachia Conference this Saturday. We've got a caller, and I'm not sure where his question is directed, but if you'll stay on the line, Will, did we just lose him? Well, we'll let you go, Will, and we're going to talk a little bit about, I think, energy efficiency, some of those workshops, and encourage everyone to come out on Saturday. And good luck with your operation. Okay, so we have a call here coming in.
Yeah, and this is actually one of the presenters as well for the conference, Nathan Hall.
Nathan?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Did you have a question, or did you want to talk about what you're up to?
I guess I didn't really have a question per se. I was just going to chime in a little bit. I'm really looking forward to the day, especially Cody's workshops. Actually, I just got the Peterson Field Guide as well as the Wildflowers of Tennessee Valley. So, I'm going to bring those and hopefully get you to look over them with me when we're there. But, just in the last couple of minutes, I wanted to just real quickly mention the renewable energy aspect of it, because I don't know if we've touched on that a whole lot yet. But, and also just to remind folks that it's this coming Saturday, March 9th, at the Jenny Wiley Convention Center outside of Prestonsburg, Kentucky, from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and so I'll be doing one also on renewable energy and basically looking at how do we make renewable energy work in the mountains. You know, I feel like a lot of folks think that, you know, solar's not really very viable in this area for various reasons, or that, you know, just a lot of these ideas for renewables are things that apply to other areas. But I'm going to try to look at three specific kind of technologies, and that's solar, micro hydropower, and sustainable biomass, and look at, you know, how do you actually make that work in a situation where, you know, where you have these haulers with steep hillsides that don't get a lot of sun, you know, right down into the hauler itself. I also look at the fact that we have just tons and tons of, you know, mountain streams that we could be doing small hydropower with, as well as even things like sediment ponds that have discharges that could easily be turned into hydropower stations. And then also looking at different ways we can do small-scale biomass energy in this area that's not harmful or detrimental to the surrounding area. And just one other thing I'll mention real quick is that I heard the Letcher County Farmers Market was mentioned earlier, and I just wanted to quickly tell people that this coming March 5th, there's actually going to be a meeting about that at the Letcher County Extension Office. We're trying to get growers and producers to come out to a meeting. So if anybody's listening in the Letcher County area that might be interested in getting involved with the farmers market here in Whitesburg, it'd be great to have you March 5th at the Extension Office in Whitesburg.
What time was that, Nathan? Do you know?
I believe that's going to be 6. I don't have internet in front of me right now, but I'm pretty sure that's 6. They have a Facebook page, so if you look up Letcher County Farmers Market on Facebook, that's usually the the best way to look up that info.
All right, great. Well, thanks for calling in.
No problem.
Yeah, and another event happening here in Letcher County this Saturday, not to compete with the Growing Appalachia, but there is a Grow Appalachia meeting at the Cowan Creek Community Center where they're going to be discussing heirloom seeds and with Bill Best, who will be there presenting. So another great local agriculture event happening here this weekend.
He was actually one of the presenters last year at Growing Appalachia, and that was probably one of my favorite workshops last year. So,
well, maybe you can go to both, you know, swing by. But we're just about through here on Mountain Talk. And so, Fern, would you give us the info for the event one more time before we head out?
Sure. Again, the event is Growing Appalachia, and it's at the Jenny Wiley Conference Center in Prestonsburg, Kentucky. It starts at 9:30 and goes to about 4:30. It's open to the public, to everyone. There is a suggested $10 for the lunch, the locally produced lunch. But we hope to see you all there. You can also go on to kftc.org/growing to find out more about the event.
And do you want people to call and reserve or anything, or just show up?
There is reservations, registration online, and they also can come and register at the event during the day.
Okay, great. Well, you've heard from Fern, who's going to be talking about energy efficiency in your home, or it could be your office, or and Cody Montgomery, who's going to talk about foraging out there and wild plants and herbs and those kinds of things. And we had Paul on the phone, who is going to talk about extending your harvest. And obviously, where if you heard him, he's got his going year around. He's got growing things in South Central Kentucky. And then Will Bowling was just talking about the community supported agriculture model that he's using for his the meat that he grows on his farm. So it sounds like an action-packed day and too many good things going on.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day of community building as well.
Good.
Too good to miss.
All right. Well, everyone sign up.
That's right. Thanks so much for joining us. And that's it for Mountain Talk tonight. And stay tuned for Hot 88.7 Hip Hop from the Hilltop coming up next, and Calls from Home at 9 o'clock. And then we have World Beat coming on at 10. So stay with us on WMMT.